Hey everybody, welcome back to a brand new episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. I had a great conversation today with one of my favorite content creators. She's a comedian, musician, living in New York City. Give it up for Cassie Wilson.
Recording in progress. Recording in progress. That's not bad.
That sounds very realistic, honestly.
Thank you so much. I think you're just gassing me up, but I'll take it.
Do you know, there's this TikTok guy who it looks very young. I don't know how old he actually, he looks like he could be 18 or maybe 24, 25. But he kind of does this Kim Kardashian mimicry thing. He looks like he could be maybe Hawaiian, maybe...
think so.
maybe also from like of some Asian heritage, but he looks very pretty, like a very pretty young boy. Mm-hmm. And he does this Kim Kardashian
a cool
voice.
And normal phrase for people to say.
I really don't know how to describe him. He's a very pretty person. And he does this Kim Kardashian, his whole channel is basically based around faking like spoofs of Kardashian. Anyway, I saw a podcast interview with him just scrolling through TikTok once, and he does this this like the Siri voice.
And that really
reminded me of that.
There's a lot of like the GPSs over the years as they got a little more like advanced. I remember like, you know, being in the back seat of the minivan growing up and like, turn right on Watertown Ave, and my parents thought it was the funniest thing to like, you know, make her Australian or whatever. They're like, turn right and what a tan F, you know.
Or like, oh, no, wrong 10.
Yeah. They're like, no, turn the car around. Oh, God.
You know what's funny is after I had already booked you to be on the podcast, my friend Linda, she's from Australia, and she lives here in Munich, and she sent me one of your videos, not knowing that I already knew your stuff from TikTok. And she's like... It was the Barbie video,
yeah.
And she knew that a bunch of us had just watched it a few times, and she was like, "Is that really what I sound like?" And I was like, "Not all the time.
Not really." People got really up in arms about it. Like, people in the comments were so upset. They were like, "Since when is it okay to make fun of people's accents?" And I'm like, "First of all,
what?
Australians are not real people. Just to put
they're
it
not.
Out there.
First, I mean, no.
like, first of all, the accent is." So out of pocket, like it's such a ridiculous accent, and so it's like, of course I'm gonna make fun of it.
It's par for the course.
Yeah, and I know it's bad. I know it's like not a good impression, and I know it's like very Kiwi and like so over the top, and it's like,
but that's
the point.
That's what's funny about it. Exactly. They never heard of jokes.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but there's a few people who there's one guy who bases his entire channel. This guy who does like the. Like,
is he the one who's like, "Oh no, I forgot my portfolio." You forgot your portfolio.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. People send me them all the time.
Yeah, and he's not even the only one. There's like two or three guys that I see who are all about making fun of the Australian accent. And come on, what you did was so harmless. At least you had like a really.
At least
good,
there was a point.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, exactly. At least there was a bit behind it. My friend Johnny came up with that concept. He was like, "You should do Barbie if Margot Robbie kept her Australian accent," and I was like, I will be doing that right now. Love that.
When you do a video like that with more detail and how does that compare to your other content? How much longer does it take you to make that where you're happy with it?
Honestly, I am pretty quick. Like, the most I'll ever do is like a few takes to get something, but I feel like once I have a concept, I'll kind of just bang it out. So like, something like that doesn't really take me that much longer than something else besides like, oh, I guess I'll put on a pink shirt and like, I don't know, put on some mascara this time. Yeah, I don't know. Not that much longer.
First off, Cassie, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
I really appreciate you taking the time. You're in New York, and happy 9/11, by the way.
Thank you so much.
What do you
and
do
to you as well?
What do you do to celebrate such a special occasion?
I have no comment.
Do you watch Loose Change?
I'm just working from home. I am thinking about 9/11 And
I mean, you should never forget.
And I'm doing this podcast.
You should really never forget.
And I never will. I never will.
You should always be thinking about it.
6 years old when it happened. So I actually do remember the day. But yeah, let's not get somber.
You know, it's
snappy.
It's funny. I kept thinking it was 9/11 for the past 4 days in a row because
wow,
I kept looking at the date wrong on my phone. I should be used to it by now, but in Europe, the day is before the
famously. Yeah.
And in general, I am used to it, but for some reason with 9/11, I kept seeing the day and then the nine, and then it was like September 9th. And I went, today's 9. No, wait, that's 9. Nine.
Wrong.
And then the next day, like, oh, but tomorrow's 9/11. And then there's like 9.
You just had so much anxiety about the day. And like, you know, you're anticipating it so much that you're like, every day is 9/11.
Every time it comes around, I keep thinking, this is the year they're going to get me for it.
Oh, yeah, classic. Absolutely. I think we've all had that thought. I was 6 years old, but still, they're going to ask me where I was. And I'll be like, I have an alibi.
What's your alibi?
It was my first grade classroom.
Age is not an alibi.
Yeah, very true. There's some evil 6 year olds out there. You never know.
Why do you think they're school shooters? Okay, moving on.
Okay, awesome stuff. Great start. Strong start to the pod today.
God. Okay, sorry. So Cassie, you're in New York, you're from there. Let's talk like from not to, you know, start with maybe questions that you'll find a little boring at first, but from scratch, you know. Where are you from in New York, and you know what got you into being a comedian, to doing what you do?
Oh, sure. I mean, I say I'm from New York, but
I'm from Connecticut.
I was born in New York, and then I was kid number two of three. My parents were like, "We got to get out of here because rent is going up."
Oh, you're a middle child.
I am middle child. Yes,
that explains.
People love to say that, but I don't think that's real, because it's like, you could say that about any. If I was an oldest child, people would be like, oh, that explains so much. It's like, or if I was youngest child, be like, oh, you just love attention, you know. I don't think that's real.
That's fair.
What, are you a middle child?
I'm the baby.
Why did you say
no,
that?
I'm the baby.
Yeah, exactly. Like anything, it's like a, you know, a zodiac sign. Like anything you say, like, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
That's a good point. That's fair.
Yeah. Anywho, yeah, middle child, moved to Connecticut when I was a wee babe, but then came back to New York pretty much as soon as I could. And yeah, I went to Wesleyan, which is a college in Connecticut, did a lot of improv there, did a lot of like plays there.
You studied theater there, right?
Nor. I actually studied music. I was a music major, so my degree is in music. But I took like a bunch of theater classes, like as many as I wanted to. I thought about double majoring, but then if you do that, you have to take like, you know, theater tech and like lighting classes, and I was like, I actually have zero interest in that, so I'm just gonna take a bunch of acting classes.
I was the same.
Yeah,
I was the same with theater or film. Like the tech stuff never interested me near as much.
Yeah, that's not for me. And then yeah, I came to New York, and then I honestly didn't get into comedy until like a few years after living here, because I was doing a lot of theater at first. And then COVID came around. I had been taking like classes at UCB. COVID came around, shut it all down. And then in 2020 is when I started making TikToks. But I didn't want to be like, I knew I wanted to like get into like live comedy, but I didn't want to be like a TikToker who is also doing, you know, you go and see. I didn't want to be someone who, like, you go to see me in a show and you can tell, like, oh, this person has never done stand-up before, or this person is only funny on the internet or whatever.
Yeah.
So I knew that, sure, like, the live comedy and the online comedy were going to be very separate because they're completely different mediums. So took, like, a couple stand-up classes. I did a bunch of, like, musical improv classes, which were really fun. And then did stand up one time, regular stand up, or like two times. And I was like, I think I'm bad at this and I don't like this. And then wrote a song instead. And that one went so much better. And I was like, oh, this is definitely more my speed and what I should be doing.
Yeah, and I've seen a few of your comedy songs. And how does it feel for you seeing the reaction? Like, what are you hoping for when you post something that you performed live? And what's the difference between those two audiences?
Yeah, it's like very different. I mean, it's very different, first of all, to post like, you know, a full like, you know, minute and a half long or 3 minute clip from something. And you can only hope that people respond well online. But again, it's not really for like online consumption necessarily. I feel like the people who are most successful, the stand-ups online who are posting their clips online, are doing like crowd work bits, or it's like a highly produced clip and it's their best joke from their set or something like that. I'm not like at that level. Like, I don't have any, you know, misgivings about where I am in my career or my journey. I'm still like very much starting out. So it's mostly like, haha, here's the song I wrote. Hope you like it. Or here's like a minute of this song. And you post it just to post it. And then you, I don't know, move on. But my song asked me a fucking question about going on dates with men who don't ask any questions. It like got to the front page of Reddit like a while ago, like six months ago or something.
That's crazy.
Yeah, except that the annoying thing was that they didn't like credit me. They were just like, woman in Brooklyn writes song. And I'm like, it would be so easy to,
or imagine,
just like,
it's under the subreddit of like annoying hoes.
Yeah, exactly.
Women who this ask too many questions.
Woman. Yeah. Exactly.
That's exactly
some,
what
like,
Reddit
weird,
would do. It would like, it would, yeah, popularize some something subreddit. You did, but under the wrong context.
Right. Like misandry or something like that. But yeah, that one like had a pretty wide reach. So I was pretty happy with that. And I think it's like taps into an experience that has become not universal, but like very common amongst women who date men. So I was happy with that one.
When you think about the inspirations that you come to, like the inspiration you get for, sorry, let me think about the phrasing. The difference between the inspiration mm-hmm. you get for a video concept you're going to make and mm-hmm. the inspiration for something you plan to do live, how would you mm-hmm. say those are different?
On the internet, things are so quick. So truly, it can be like you come up with a concept, it could be just like one joke, or it could be I'm going to get 3 beats out of this or 5 beats out of this, and it's going to be 30 seconds and then it's done. Because people are just consuming so much content so quickly. So it's about like grabbing your attention, keeping it for a few seconds, and then they move on. It's honestly a lot harder to come up with a concept for like a live song. I do find that figuring out the concept is the hard part, because once I have it, if it's a strong enough concept, then I can like, then the vision becomes very clear and I can just like sit down and write it.
Yeah.
I mean, Ask Me a Fucking Question was like one of those. And then the first song that I like finished, the first comedy song I finished, was a One Direction fan fiction song. And I like had this idea of just like, oh, what if it was fan fiction but a song? And I wrote that very quickly, and I really haven't changed much over the year and a half or so that I've been performing it. So it takes a lot more work to figure out a full, you know, 3-minute song when it's live.
Yeah.
It's just like meatier. You have to have more.
Yeah,
more. Yeah, you have to have more of a concept, more like, I don't know.
More options, like where you can take it.
Longer. Yeah, exactly.
A video, I feel like you can have almost just one joke even, but if you can kind of beat it to death from looking at it from a couple of different ways.
Exactly.
And on stage, you kind of have to have a few different things you want to hit and still look at them from different.
Yeah, because people are going to get bored. Yeah. Like, you know, famously, you can't scroll away when you're there in person. So you do have to like, you know, it's this kind of balance, I think, of, especially with musical comedy, of like giving the audience a formula and then breaking it. Mm-hmm. It's like if it's a simple enough kind of musical concept, which like, you know, usually it's not, I'm not going absolutely off and doing experimental jazz up there or anything. You know, it'll be like a 4-chord song, and then you give people the concept and they mm-hmm. go, ha ha ha. And then you break it. And then, you know, a surprise laugh is when people laugh and they sound like they didn't expect to laugh.
Yeah.
Those are kind of the most fun ones. Yeah,
I agree. I think as a fan and as a fellow performer, that's the best kind of laugh you can hope to ever achieve, is the one they didn't mm-hmm. see coming. As someone who performs, because also I was, the first time I saw you performing with a guitar, I found that interesting too, because I really knew you only as your video content for a long time. Mm-hmm. I had kind of followed your stuff on TikTok much longer than before I reached out to you on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I chose to do that later, but TikTok.
I love my fans. I'll sign anything you want.
anyway, I've sent
please.
Over a few t-shirts. If you could just write all your lyrics.
Awesome.
Down.
No worries.
No, but I was going to say, like, for me, when I was in high school, the biggest inspiration for me, joke writing and also thinking about performing with a musical instrument, was Dimitri Martin. That was someone who was very influential to me at the time. I don't necessarily think it's the same influence to me now, but at the time it was like, I've never thought of jokes so simple that are really like destroying my mind. Mm-hmm. You know, when you think about being a performer on stage specifically, and on stage with an instrument specifically, what are the people that, you know, tickled your fancy and inspired you that way?
I mean, there people love to be like, she's female Bo Burnham. Bo Burnham was like someone who is so extremely for my generation. You know, I grew up watching him on YouTube and then saw him live a couple times.
Of course.
I truly think he's a genius.
Yeah, sure.
And so I take a lot of inspo from him. But then also Catherine Cohen is a New York-based comedian. She's brilliant. She has a podcast called Seek Treatment. Seek Treatment with Pat Regan. They are so funny. And she is, I've seen her live a bunch of times. She's an incredible performer. Like, her stage presence is unbelievable. And her songs are just so smart. And other than that, she also has so many jokes in between. I just saw her newest hour. And I was just blown away by how much she fit into 1 hour of material. So yeah, they're not as many musical comedians, obviously, as there are just like straight stand-ups, but the ones that are out there, I feel like the ones that rise to success are kind of brilliant. Morgan Jay is another one who I just saw live in New York, and he was fantastic. He has a very different vibe where he'll stretch out a song to be 10 or 15 minutes long via crowd work. And that's a completely different approach.
Wow, yeah.
Because, you know, and that really, going to see other musical comedians really helps me rethink about the craft, I suppose, because, you know, it's easy to get stuck in your own formulas where it's like, I'm going to write a 3-minute song and then that's it. So if I want to fill up an hour, I have to have, you know, 10 or 15 songs. And that's a huge undertaking. Yeah. It's like a whole album, you know? But like Morgan Jay is someone who will make a song 10 minutes. And then Dylan Adler is another incredible comedian who will do a 15-second song, a 30-second song, these little kind of like mini songs. And so I think it's so important if you are a performer, if you are, I don't know, a comedian or an artist in any way, to like always be seeing people who you want to emulate and like gaining inspo from them, because you can learn so much just from like watching your peers.
I completely agree with that. I think it's I find myself in such a drought when I haven't had the chance to, because you can watch videos all the time, and eventually you might even run into kind of a wall where watching videos isn't helping anymore.
Yeah,
because you're kind of getting numb to the whole thing, and this chemical reaction in your brain isn't inspiring you. It's more of like just numbing you to the other things going on. And if I think seeing live performances and seeing live concerts. I mean, as a fellow musician too, I think like seeing a live show just gives you this sparkle of like, I never thought about, you know, maybe even something so small as like, oh, connecting those two chords. I just never thought, oh, right. But yeah, but that works, you know, and just sparking this little thing. And the other two I thought about, and just in terms of like musical comedians, I never dove too deep into Nick Thune, but I heard good things. I saw like one special, I think. I don't know if he's canceled now. I don't know if he's not funny.
That was not the face I was making. That was me being like, I'm not familiar.
Okay, God. I thought you were like, you like Nick Thune.
I was like, how could you?
I was like, I'm so sorry. I feel so out of the loop since I live in Germany.
That does happen a lot. In terms of like, you mentioned someone, it's like, oh, you're actually not like...
I'm not allowed to like
anymore. Sorry.
But do you know the Garfunkel and Oates?
Oh yeah. Love them.
Love them.
Another duo that I watched so much.
Yeah.
Growing up, honestly.
And pure comics, like pure straight up stand ups. Who are some people that really just you go like, fuck? I wish I'd thought of the structure, or they're so funny.
Yeah, there are. I mean, Pat Regan from Seek Treatment is brilliant. And then I like a lot of comedy podcasts. Exploration Live is another one of my favorite comedy pods, and that's Charlie Bardet and Natalie Rotter-Lateman, and they are both just so funny as stand-ups. Sam Taggart is another one who... Sam Taggart brings this, like, goofiness that I just love, and something that this other amazing comedian Mike Falzone once said to me was like, if you as the performer are having fun, it gives the audience permission to have fun. And I think that is so, that's been so important for me to remember, to kind of like get out of my own head and be like, I am here to have fun. I'm here because I love this. And if the audience can see me enjoying myself, then they have permission to enjoy themselves as well.
Yeah.
And then like Aparna Nancherla, I think is brilliant. I've been ever since I moved to New York, I've been very into the like Brooklyn alt comedy scene, as it were, I suppose. So I've seen so many shows over the years, and I'm a huge fan of comedy, and so it's really fun for me to kind of start doing it as well, because I'm kind of a, I don't know, not a comedy nerd, I don't want to say.
No, but that's
like,
good. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. So there's so many that I love, and there's so many people doing amazing work right now.
I'm so happy to hear all these names I've never heard before, because that's so cool to finally go down a path. Like, I mean, I listen to so many comedy podcasts too, but I feel like I do get stuck in things of like, well, that's what I know I like. So mm-hmm. I listen to those, and it's very hard for me to branch into something new mm-hmm. that I you know, maybe wouldn't have thought of listening to or looking for. I found like so a lot of stand-ups, I don't even know they have podcasts until I think, well, I haven't really looked to see what the name of it might be. Mm-hmm. And then finding it and going like, oh, right, of course. Oh, my God, sure. You know?
Yeah. It's a really great medium, and especially listening to podcasts and then like finding, like listening to the guests on those podcasts is how I've discovered a lot of comedians, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like if there are guests on a podcast that I like, then I'll go and follow them and I'll see their work and see their shows.
Mm-hmm. What are some if you had a long term goal in terms of, you know, the classic thing? And I feel like this is still pretty common for a lot of comedic types, but maybe a long term goal for people is to have some sort of hands on experience with a type of television show or a film or something mm-hmm. like that. What would be something that if you had the total creative control and all the audience you'd ever want to have the influence to do it, what would you really want to be able to, like, you know, perform Madison Square Garden or have your own TV show, like a Tig Notaro thing or Conan or, you know?
Oh, gosh. I'm someone who it's hard for me to kind of think long term because...
Middle child.
I don't know.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, that classic middle child thing.
Because you're Pisces. I don't even know.
Yeah, and I'm always saying that. No. Okay, so like I think I guess more in short term spurts. So like right now I'm trying to just like write a half hour and do a half hour of material. Eventually I will hopefully turn that into an hour long show. And then I would love to take that on the road and go to a bunch of cities and perform. I love performing. I'm a performer like through and through. I mean, in my day-to-day life as well. Hello freaking L.
But that's kind of responsible goals, I think. I feel like I kind of understand your brain a little bit, not to say that I really know you mm-hmm. so far, but I do think some things you've said, I feel the same way. It's easier to think in these sort of smaller, shorter goals and to not get too stressed out or too pressured by
it the keeps
future.
Them attainable.
Yes.
It's like, what can I do right now? What can I do in the next 6 months? Instead of like, where do I want to be in 10 years? Because I have no idea. And there's no one path for comedians. And especially not for like content creators, because this field is still so new. So, you know, I see people doing things that I think are really interesting and really cool. And so it's like, oh, that's one direction, shout out, that I could, you know, maybe take this type of work. But really I want to focus on like figuring out my half hour and then my hour and then taking that on the road. If someone wants to make that into a special and blast it out for the world to see, that sounds good to me. And then, I could definitely see myself like, I don't know, TV of some kind. I don't know. It's like I feel like I have this like duality in me of like, why not me has always been. That's something that like my mother instilled in me is like, why shouldn't it be you for whatever thing you're thinking about, whatever goal you have is like, why not me? Everyone is just a person.
Yeah.
One person is not more deserving of success or whatever than another person. So why not me? But also this other part of me is like, well, who would ever want to put me on TV? You know what I mean? Or like, this like imposter syndrome of like, oh, yes. I could never do that. So I really try to focus on the why not me part of my brain. So, but again, it's
a healthier option probably.
To just be a little bit delulu in like a good way.
I mean, I think entertainers kind of just have to be a little delusional.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean you have to think that you have something to say that is worth listening to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what are we doing here? And so I think like you have to have a strong sense of self and Some people, I think that is ego, but I disagree. I think it's like you need to have a healthy sense of self and a healthy sense of like what I'm saying is worthwhile. It's worth watching. If I want people to buy tickets to something, I certainly hope that I will make that worth their time and that I will give them a good time and, you know, make them laugh or make them think.
Yeah, it's a care. It's a care for those who are actually enjoying what you do. I think we feel the same way on that, that anybody who is a new follow or who comments even something, just a heart emoji or shares it once, mm-hmm. it's like that attention and that, mm-hmm. that enjoyment of something you're creating means so much.
Yeah, you know, I mean, attention is all we have. Like,
yeah.
And to keep someone's attention for 30 seconds or for 3 minutes or for an hour is, in a way, it's like respecting that person's time.
Right.
And that's what I wanted to do when I like was trying to think about like, what do I want my live comedy to be? I don't want, if someone buys a ticket to a show that I'm in, I don't want them to think I went and saw a TikToker that I follow and she sucked and she like didn't know how to do this live comedy. Like you know, people do stand up for years and years and years before they find any kind of success. And since I kind of have like a platform, it is this kind of scary thing. This is where some of my imposter syndrome comes from, is like, do I actually have the experience to back this up? This like live comedy experience to back this up? Because yes, I have a platform and therefore people are more willing to like book me on a show or even like come see me on a show. So I feel like I have to work harder, kind of faster, because I feel like in a way I've skipped the line. You know what I mean? In terms of like, because I have a platform, people are more willing to book me on something. Mm-hmm. And so I really have to make sure that I'm...
that you deliver.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
But I think I do.
I think
I'm good at what I do.
I think it shows that I think you're doing well and it's growing. And I mean, I think it shows, imposter syndrome is something I think we both really deeply understand, but but it also shows that you're doing well and I think it's working. But I feel like in the same way that like a professional weightlifter needs to do some serious stretches every time that before they go lift something incredible, entertainers at whatever platform they may be entertaining in need to have a kind of delusion.
Yeah.
You
absolutely.
Know, otherwise they won't be able to, like, I had a conversation with, I don't know if you know this content creator, Laura Ramoso, but she's...
Oh yeah, so funny, huge fan.
She's amazing, and she came on the podcast too, and we had this chat about, we both came to the conclusion in a funny way that like, when we're making our videos, we have to make them completely alone because we can't be as ridiculous as we need to be.
Yep.
Unless we're doing it alone. And then at the end, it's like, yeah, but if I'm pushing it as far and as hard and as stupid as I can alone, then the end product that I want you to see is like worth your time.
Yep, exactly. Because
then it's like, then I deleted four takes and like exactly knew when to push in and exactly when to cut. And people don't see, for bigger things, maybe like your Barbie video or other, or your songs or the things I've done, like the people don't see how much care, even on sometimes just quick ideas, how much care goes into it.
Yeah. And I think even if you're not spending, you know, hours and hours making a 30-second video, that care comes through because we've been doing it for however long. Like I've been making short form videos, even if it's not on TikTok or Instagram. I used to, you know, I was on YouTube starting when I was like 13, was making like YouTube videos for no one essentially.
I still make them for no one.
Yeah, exactly. And then like on Snapchat in college, you know, it was like, oh, how can I make my Snap story funny and engaging? And so it's like over time you do like build these skills. And so, you know, even if you're making a 30-second video and it only takes you, you know, three takes or one take or whatever, over time you've gained those skills. And so those are the kind of muscles I think that you're flexing in those moments. We keep going back to muscles. I don't know. I am extremely ripped right now, so I think that's probably also why weightlifting is on the mind.
For a second, I thought you said muzzles, like on dogs, and I was like, I don't remember bringing that
muscles,
up.
Muscles.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'll second that. That the tank top is popping off of that jacked back. You're flushing in our face right now.
Absolutely.
I like the skull and crossbone tattoo as well. So
that's not what it is, but thank you so much.
It's actually the Twin Towers.
Yeah. Oh God.
On our first phone call, you talked about when you were studying theater. Your first passion was maybe even becoming a dramatic actress of sorts. Would you still have interest in that if the option came up for that?
So the theater that I used to do was actually not on the performing end. I was a composer and music director for musicals. So I wrote a couple musicals and then had a production of one of them. My like first year in New York when I was like 23, it was off Broadway. And that was a real like life comes at you fast moment where my writing partner and I submitted our show to a bunch of musicals and we got into kind of the biggest festival that we... Wait, did I say submitted to a bunch of musicals? Yeah. We submitted our musical to a bunch of festivals and we got into the biggest one that we submitted it to. And then suddenly we had to get a creative team together and cast it. And the biggest challenge was raising all the money for it. So we had to self-produce. So we had to raise $60,000 in 3 months. And I was 23 years old and I had no idea how to do that.
Wow. What year was this?
So this was 2018. Yeah. And we did it. We did it somehow. And I learned a ton from that. And I also learned through that and then a couple other like music gigs that I had over the next year in terms of like I was music directing or I was assisting music directors or orchestrators. And I love theater in a way. And I really loved the musical that we wrote, but I did not love the theater industry itself. It's one of those classic industries where you're expected to work for little or no money and you do it for the love of the game. And people get away with paying people nothing because so many people want to be in the industry. So if you say no to this like very small stipend, someone else is right behind you to take your place. And I really didn't like that because I was like, even back then, I was like, wow, I really feel like I should be being paid for my labor. Not really sure what's happening here. You know, if I'm working 6 days a week and getting paid $500 a week before taxes, that's not something that you can live on in New York or probably anywhere. So I kind of pivoted and started to get normal jobs and started to do comedy, which famously... Everyone gets rich by doing Brooklyn alt comedy.
Yeah, exactly. That's the number one path.
Tons of money.
There's
here.
Too
yeah,
many people doing it. Honestly, this just
yeah. Sometimes people offer me a fee that's too high, and I'm like, stop, you guys. You need this money. Definitely have never lost money doing a show. That's not something that's ever happened.
Never. Creators frequently never go in the minus.
Yep.
That's why I have so Correct. Many charities in our names. I've actually filed right, a few yeah. new charities during this call
that's
in your name.
That's so beautiful. Thank you so much.
I knew you'd want it.
The world.
I knew you'd yeah. want it.
And I do. And I do.
But, I mean, someone in that position, like, how do you just... I mean, you must have had this crazy itch inside of you to pursue comedy anyway. Because you can't just be in that position and go, well, theater's not working out. Guess I'll be a stand-up. You know, it's like, how else can I be poor? You probably had right. a, you know?
I mean, there was always kind of this, like... Inside You Are Two Wolves, is that what it is? I mean, it was kind of this choice that I made right out of college of like theater kind of fell into my lap in a way. I never planned on like being a composer, music director. I honestly didn't even really know that people were still making theater, as like embarrassing as that might sound. I was just so out of touch with the theater world.
You don't follow Josh Groban's TikTok?
I mean, TikTok did not exist back then. I was gonna say that. So, yeah, but I did always have this feeling when I was like teaching people a song or writing a song or whatever and like watching other people perform it. That was such a joy to have extremely talented actors and performers perform my music, our musical.
Yeah.
And that was a really amazing, powerful thing. And I would never change that. And I never had the desire to be like, that should be me up there because I'm not like a strong enough singer to like be in musicals. But I did have this sense of like, maybe watching actors on a show that I was assisting where I was like, man, I do miss performing. I would love to be not behind the scenes anymore. So there was like a very kind of intentional pivot and it was very scary to stop trying to work in theater, get kind of like normie jobs and then decide, okay, I'm gonna take some comedy classes on the side, maybe start making TikToks and like see where that goes. So that was scary, but I'm glad I did it.
I think it's very good that you did that pivot. And I think a lot of people have a pivot at some point in their life, even when they're not sure exactly what the pivot means or what it's going to be. I would just ask so that I'm aware of it. What exactly would you consider your strongest musical capabilities. I mean, coming from someone who, like, I'm a songwriter, and I would mm-hmm. say the only really strength I probably have, I have a really, I'm best at guitar. I wouldn't say I'm a great guitarist, mm-hmm. but I'm best at that if you had to put me in a room of different instruments. So I'd mm-hmm. say, like, guitar, like, finger picking, and I really do take pride in my song structuring and lyrics. But that's it. I wouldn't say like, mm-hmm. but I'm also a great pianist and great. I'm like yeah. very mediocre at the other things. What would you say as, you know, as someone who's composed? I mean, that's yeah. quite a feat. What would you say your best strengths are in music?
Definitely. I mean, as of 4 or 5 years ago, I would say composing and arranging. I did a lot of a cappella in college, and I was like very, very, very into the arrangements that I would do. Either for my a cappella groups or for the a cappella covers that I would post on YouTube way back in the day.
Are they still up, by the way?
Some of them are. I've put a bunch of videos on private because they are simply too embarrassing for me to look at. But yeah, a lot of a cappella covers still do exist out there.
But those links yeah. are in the description, guys. Those links yep. are in the show notes.
Feel free to go check it out. But yeah, no, composing and arranging, like doing vocal arrangements was definitely my strength back then. And now it's like I don't really do that as much anymore. I still love it. And I still, you know, I sing in groups sometimes, and that's like a joy that I get.
Yeah.
And now I'm just like a solid instrument. You know, I'm pretty good at guitar. I'm pretty good at piano, and I'm a pretty good songwriter. So
yeah,
I don't know, it's all changed a lot over the years.
If you hadn't pursued comedy in the way that you did, but instead tried to pursue music in a different way from the way that you mm-hmm. started, where would you like to have seen yourself as a musician, like in a band or composing for something else?
Probably as like a folksy singer-songwriter. I used to write a lot of kind of sad folksy songs.
So and you're Bo Burnham and you're Phoebe Bridgers.
Yeah, it's whatever. I'm kind of both sides of a power couple, I would say. I'm still really like proud of those songs, but I also remember like this very poignant moment that I had when I was like doing a show. I didn't like do a lot of shows like as a musician, but the couple that I did, I think I was like 18 or 19 or 20, and I was like doing a show, and I was like singing all these sad songs. And then in between the songs, I would be like bantering with the audience and like trying to make them laugh. And I was like, oh, that's actually something I should take note of, where it's like, I actually don't want to make people sad. I would like to make people laugh and make them happy instead. So, but it would have, if I didn't have that kind of drive or desire, I probably would have been like folksy.
Yeah. When you were in college, did you have that sort of part of you that sat under the tree in the quad with the book and listened to Jose Gonzalez and imagined what kind of soundtrack you'd write for an indie film?
Actually, what it was I was in an Eastern European folk singing group called Slave, which means songbird in Bulgarian.
Did not see that coming.
That was more my vibe. And we still sing together sometimes. So that group was like very powerful for me. Yeah, it's the most Wesleyan thing in the entire world. It's like very crunchy. Wow. But do you have really amazing.
Do you have Eastern European roots in your heritage and stuff?
I don't. I have some family that's Russian. My aunt married a Russian, and so I have a Russian uncle and cousin, but I myself am not Eastern European.
Has your family ever 23andMe'd? Do you know how far back, like where your roots
we
go?
Have not. I'm probably like a quarter Italian, three quarters like a random white chick, like who really knows? Waspy, I would say.
What? Waspy.
I think I've asked my dad before when I was a kid. I was like, Dad, what are we? And he was kind of like, I don't know, and who cares? And I was like, great, good talk.
That's what I say to myself every time I look in the mirror. No one knows right. you and no one cares about you.
And it's fine.
Anyway, TikTok, yeah. guys, I'm going to end the live now. So,
yeah, pretty much. This has been your daily affirmations.
Oh, man. What was I going to say next? So that was your musical strengths. And when you, what was the first couple of videos that you started putting out where you, like, starting out, going into this medium, making TikToks, you were at the same time you were posting to Instagram, right? Or did you do that later?
I did that later. I started just on TikTok, and then my friend Marley Goddard, who has worked a lot in, like, online content, we had a FaceTime where she was like, you need to, if you're going to, like, do this, you should do this and, like, start posting everywhere. And I was like, oh, it's so embarrassing to post on Instagram. She was like, do it anyway. And then I'm ultimately very glad that I listened to her.
Yeah, that's yeah. I think that was a good idea too, and that's how I felt about it too. For a long time, it was just TikTok with the funny stuff.
Yep.
But what was the first couple of videos in that world in TikTok where you saw the response that you were hoping for and was happy to like try and pursue it and say, hey, maybe this is working?
Honestly, the sixth or seventh TikTok that I made ever mm-hmm. like went very viral. And it was me talking in an Australian accent. It was like, I did not plan on like pursuing TikTok in any way. I was there just like as a watcher. And had made a couple, like, you know, would make one every 2 months, and I had like 78 followers, like genuinely. And then I made one that was like me every time I'm home alone. It was just me talking to myself in an Australian accent. And that exploded. And I was like, oh my God, it's happening, it's happening, it's happening. And, you know, that got like 3 million views in a couple days or something. And that was absolutely nuts. And then like a month later, I made a video called like People Who Don't Drink Coffee and did this little format where...
I saw that one.
Yeah, that one really kind of popped off. Like a lot of people saw that kind of on different platforms. I think that also was on like Reddit and like Snapchat and stuff like that. And the format of that one, I wanted to do like some kind of line, like a snarky little line. And then I wanted to have like a bass drop of some kind, like, but I couldn't figure out how to edit that. I couldn't figure out how to make that back then because I was like still very new to the platform. So instead I was like, what if I just do like a little laugh? I remember like doing the dishes and then kind of laughing to myself. And I was like, oh, what if with every line I say, I just go and kind of like escalate them. And that format really worked and like resonated with people. So
I think that might've been the first one. I think that was the first one I saw from you. And that was an instant follow. Like that was the funniest. That struck such a chord.
So those two really popped off like very quickly, and then I was like, okay, I guess I'll do more of this because it's really fun. And you know, that's still kind of what it is to me, is like I want to make myself laugh and make things that I think are funny, and if other people, you know, other people like them and other people laugh, then that's great. And that's really the goal, is to just like be a big old goof and make people LOL.
I feel exactly the same way about it, and I think that you're doing a really awesome job. Not that you need anybody's approval. You're doing you, and it's
exactly
great.
My ego is strong enough, but thank you so much. Always nice to hear.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, good. Yeah, I'm fine. Okay. No, but Cassie, I know you got to go. I just wanted to say once again, thank you so much for making the time. It's nice to finally get to meet you. I've watched your videos for a long time, so I appreciate that you clicked accept on the DM and said yes, let's do it.
Yeah, no worries. I love my fans once again. Thank you so much for having me. This has been so fun. A little pre-work day chat. Love that.
I love to help ego boost my creator friends before they go off and enjoy their 9/11s.
That means the world. Yeah, and you're always saying that. That is famously your favorite
thing. That's my thing. Yep. No, but Cassie, thank you so much. It's been a load of fun. I hope that you know, let's stay in touch for the next time that like you have you know, some level up in your career that you're really happy to talk about. I'd love to have you back on.
Great.
We can discuss it. That'd be fun.
Whenever I have something to plug, I will be sure to hit you up and I'll be back.
Plug away. Consider me Mr. Socket.
Great.
That's the worst joke.
And let's go out with that one. That was tough.
All right, let's end the call.
Thank you so much.
Look out, baby. The Saints are coming through. And it's all over now.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.